You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
With me is Michael Power, former investment strategist at 91, and for our podcast, he's a contributor to Daily Maverick. Last time, Michael spoke of renewables, energy that is, but now he's going to startle us by talking about the future of AI. Michael, welcome from Kenya, I understand. How's Kenya today?
The sun is shining. I can see the odd cloud, but not many. It's glorious.
Fantastic. Well, I won't ask you about animals and drinks by the pool and all that sort of thing, because we want to get on to this. I just want to go back to the renewables chat very, very briefly, because in a recent Trump speech, I think it was that big ramble-a-thon he did at the United Nations, he said China just make the windmills, the wind turbines, that is, which are, of course, noisy, and they eventually rust away, and they sell them to Europe and other places, but they don't have any wind farms themselves. That's nonsense, isn't it?
Complete and utter nonsense. I can't tell you how much. He famously said in July, I've never seen a wind farm in China. Can someone show me one? And the fact of the matter is, in the northwest of China, where the Gobi Desert and the Taklamakan Desert are, and there's no people to annoy, no golf courses, for instance, there are vast, I don't even know what you call them, farms of wind farms and also sun farms. So it's a combination of the wind and the sun in the deserts that are basically giving China this leg up in the world of energy.
Okay, and we'll come to that when it comes to AI as well. And that that vision that I've got of these vast farms of wind turbines reminds me of the beginning of the film Blade Runner 2049. It wasn't obviously windmills, but there was just miles and miles of something futuristic. Anyway, I'm getting off the point. You say the following in your article, your latest article, which has caused a lot of a comment, a bit of a stir, I might add. You say the following: we are witnessing the birth of a new paradigm, artificial intelligence as infrastructure, not product. You go on to say there is a quiet revolution unfolding, not in silicon, but in sovereignty. And this is not so much about national sovereignty, but more about consumer sovereignty. The future of AI is being decided not by which company trains the biggest model, but by who owns and, above all, who uses the recipe the model provides. I'm sort of understanding now, Michael, but then after that, I get really fogged. And you admitted on LinkedIn that you were also a bit fogged with AI before you wrote this.
I was intrigued and intimidated. I'm not sure I was specifically fogged. And in the time since I've written that article, I've become far more understanding of exactly what's going on. And so if there's any doubt left in your mind or lack of clarity, I'm happy to banish it.
Okay, please banish by not imagining, but by actually seeing the reality that on the end of the line is somebody who didn't understand your article when you come to SLMs and all that sort of thing. But please go on. What did you discover when you delved into the murky world, murky to me anyway, the murky world of AI?
What matters now is not the chip, it's the ecosystem. And the ecosystem is made up by hardware and software. And of course, in the case of China, they were restricted in their access to particularly NVIDIA hardware. So they've essentially compensated by developing their software to an extraordinary degree. So today in China, the chips are built around the software and not vice versa. The software is doing the heavy lifting. I'm not trying to say that it's just software alone. It's an ecosystem. It requires both hardware and software. But those people who just look at the power of the NVIDIA chip, for instance, it's a bit like looking under the hood of a car at the horsepower of an engine without understanding the totality of how the car is put together and how it will perform on the road. So I think what's happening at the moment is people have been blinded by teraflops, which is the key measure of power, and don't understand the wider significance. And there are two statistics that have come out in the last week which make me really take notice of what's going on. The first came from the venture capital backer, Andreessen Horowitz, which is probably the most powerful venture capital backer in the world. And they say now that 80% of the presentations done by them to them by startups are done on Chinese software. That is a devastating indictment of the big companies in the United States. The second thing is that Qwen, which is the model or family of models put out by Alibaba, recently released an update, and that update now is top of the Hugging Face leaderboard, which is the way in which you basically decide how well the latest large language models are being accepted. And I should underline the point here is that the Chinese family of models, the likes of DeepSeek as well, are generally speaking outperforming most of the Mistrals and the ChatGPTs and the other models that are coming out of the West.
Well, this is terribly interesting and obviously has potentially a huge impact on what we've come to know as AI. I mean, we screen and we see NVIDIA at around 175, 180, whatever it is, because of their chips that are terribly powerful and cost an absolute fortune. Are you saying that these chips might not be necessary in their current form in the future because it can be done better elsewhere and in a different format?
Yes, and because of the way in which particularly the American fraternity of software has grown up, they have used what's closed weight. They've used closed weight large language models, which is what the NVIDIA is being applied to, and not open weight, or not by and large open weight. There are a couple of exceptions, but the vast majority of them are closed weight. Now, this is critically important because it basically means that you end up with large language models that run these chips that are not very flexible. Whereas in China, the large language models, which are open source, can be reconfigured by the user, and they're much more flexible. Furthermore, the Chinese have introduced, it's been echoed in the West, but they haven't done it successfully yet, something called a mixture of experts, which basically allows you and I, sitting wherever we are in the world, to use one of these models, and we send in data by using it, which then gets fed into these mixture of experts who then upgrade their knowledge as a result of that input and then send it out in a refined form immediately thereafter to the rest of the world. This is just extraordinary. It's a sort of a circle that goes round and round between consumer and the models, which is why I say this is leading to the paramountcy of the consumer.
You say, and from a market point of view, and this is a very, my podcasts tend to lean towards market analysis. You say Wall Street still bets on the incumbent triumvirate, closed weight LLMs, NVIDIA chips and hyperscale clouds, with the tens and hundreds of billions that are being invested in these closed weight systems of which you speak. Is that all going to come to naught? Is it going to be all a giant chase of wasted money?
If I was the man from Mars coming down at this with a fresh perspective,
yeah.
The thing about the Chinese models is while they do need data centers in a very select way, they don't need them anything like as much as they do in the United States because they have something called distributed AI, which means that sitting in my phone, there is the capacity to do small amounts of computing that is part and parcel of their wider, dare I say it, data center. That means that when I do something or say something or work on my compute, on my AI on my phone, I am essentially taking the weight off the need to have data centers and cloud, and thereby massively reducing the cost. Not altogether, they still need data centers, but nothing like on the scale that the system of the American system, which is, as I say, using closed weight software with the likes of the very powerful chips from NVIDIA, but nevertheless, it's not something that is distributed. The Chinese model is essentially increasingly distributed. It's all over the world. It's embedded in a factory in not just in China, but anywhere where there's a degree of automation. You can have that software embedded in your factory. And your factory increasingly will be able to essentially detect a problem, send that problem back to the center, that immediately it will be looked at and a solution is immediately dispatched. And it's happening in, you know, pretty close to nanoseconds. And that's something about this, is that it's a self-upgrading system to a far greater degree than the closed weight systems of the United States, which is why it is so powerful, which is why I would say that, you know, in Hugging Face now, it's Chinese large language models like Qwen and DeepSeek that are winning the race.
So what you're saying, it's all really about adaptability and being nimble, essentially. That's what
Absolutely. This is Darwin in motion. This is the survival of the fittest by not so who's the strongest or has the biggest chip, but the one who's most adaptable.
Yes, and of course, adaptability comes down to some of the examples that you give. You say, what if the next $1 trillion AI company isn't built in Silicon Valley? You put that intriguing question to us, and you say, what if it's built in Hyderabad? This is one of your examples, where a startup fine-tunes a 7 billion parameter model on local dialects serving millions who speak Tamil, Telugu, or Bengali. So again, that's the adaptability and ability to be nimble that I spoke about. And this could change everything, Michael.
This could change everything. And I think there are one or two people on whom this whole idea is beginning to dawn. The narrative in the United States in particular is so strong because it's so caught up, particularly in the tech boom in the stock market, that you're not really allowed to say anything against it. But the reality is that, you know, if 80% of the startups presenting to Andreessen Horowitz are using Chinese large language models, that's a pretty stunning indictment. This is the most powerful venture capital company in the world, and all the new prospects they're looking at, I say all 80% of them, are using Chinese software.
Tell us about the power implications, because America, it's not running out of power, but it certainly needs to develop more for the future. What about China? China's way ahead.
Massively ahead. And of course, the two systems that we're talking about, the two ecosystems here, the Chinese one is far less power hungry because so much of the power usage is distributed, whereas the US system is much more power hungry because it's concentrated, particularly with things like the data centers. So, yes, I mean, China's been running away with particularly renewable energy, as my previous article showed, and that has built in absolutely no shortage whatsoever when it comes to the availability of power for China's AI ecosystem. Quite the opposite in the United States, where, you know, electricity prices are rising dramatically. They're up 10% this year, and there are shortages breaking out everywhere. And it's potentially electricity prices going to become quite a hefty political issue in the coming elections. So I think that what we've got here is that the United States has neglected power, which in a strange sort of way, they tend to need more given their particular model than the Chinese. Whereas the Chinese have gone hell for leather and produced lots of wind farms and solar panel farms. And also they're now putting in massive hydro projects. And that means they've got all the power they need and more. So it's the man from Mars looking at this situation from a fresh perspective would start scratching his head.
The Aladdin's cave of AI isn't locked, you say. It never was. The world just thought it was. I would say it's the big titans made us believe it was, the titans in America.
Well, that's probably right. I mean, that's a better refinement to that phrase, but it doesn't run off the tongue quite so quickly. But yes, absolutely. I think we have been, dare I say it, conned. But the reality is as I say, and perversely, because of the hardware restrictions that were placed on China, they took another route. And that route was software heavy. Now, there has been a precedent in all of this, of course, and that was Linux. And beyond that, Android, which is built on Linux. And it was Linux that really upset IBM at the end of the 1990s. Obviously, IBM has reconfigured its offering and it's now very heavy into data centers and cloud and the like, out of the frying pan into the fire. I think so. But the reality is that, you know, 100% of all supercomputers in the world today are not run on Microsoft. They're run on Linux. And our cell phones are much more geared towards Android, which, as I say, is a Linux spin-off, and like the Chinese software packages, it's open source. And the result is that you can have these precedents, the Android and before that, the Linux precedent, that give you some indication of where things might be going.
Who knows about this? If I know about it, and you're a clever chap, and you created this article. I mean, has it caused a bit of a stir? Is what I'm trying to say. Has Silicon Valley?
It has
contacted you.
And I can't really, out of respect for the people that I'm in contact with, I've got to have to be anonymous about the sorts of people that I've had feedback from. Suffice it to say, I've been invited to the Bahamas next February to speak on this subject at a Brains Trust. And suffice it to say, I'm actually in touch with one of the chief engineers of the big boys in Silicon Valley, and he's just scratching his head and not able really to answer what I'm saying. He eventually dismissed it very cryptically as saying it's a fantastic vision. It just cuts across the typical left brain approach that we in Silicon Valley have towards where we stand. Being a right brain person myself, that probably, you know, it ties up.
So you're going to be an AI consultant to the big boys, Michael, from now on, traveling around to exotic places and imparting
Maybe
your wisdom.
No, I doubt it. I just will be a commentator. But I will say this, that I think there is a reckoning in the not too distant future that's based on the idea of recognizing that the Chinese ecosystems, and I cannot repeat that word more often, ecosystems are winning and they're beating. I mean, as I say, the horsepower of NVIDIA with cars that are much better suited to the roads that they're forced to drive on.
What are you tackling next, Michael?
Look, I'm actually going to, and you'll love this, address. So what does all of this mean for the stock market? Because I think that that's the unfinished question in this. And by the way, if you want to sort of amuse yourself or perhaps shock yourself, run up two charts comparing the performance in September of NVIDIA versus Alibaba.
Okay, I'm doing that. I'm writing a note immediately. And I suppose if I short sell ahead of any talk you give, it's not insider trading, is it? It's good it's out there. But
not at all.
It's
not at all.
But seriously, I mean, these things have happened before. Suddenly everybody thought that nothing could be, no monopoly could be penetrated. And suddenly a few cracks appeared and that was it. It was gone.
And there's one thing I haven't mentioned in all of this, which is the real killer, I suppose. In the end, it is the killer. Is that Chinese software, LLMs, large language models, are free to the user. There's no cost to the user.
Okay. And this will, of course, evolve. By the time you get to the Caribbean in February, it will be a completely different story that you'll be telling based on this one, of course. But, Michael, it's fascinating stuff. Thanks so much for your time. Even I'm starting to understand this now. Michael Power is a contributor to Daily Maverick, formerly investment strategist at 91 in Cape Town. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.